Now that you're here, we're all in the company of your cool aunt. I'm Sam.
And I'm Ted.
And this is the Your Cool Aunts podcast, where we follow the lives and times of cool aunts through Claire's diary. So welcome back. And if you're new here, you can also join the conversation in our Facebook group. There's more on our website and Twitter and Instagram, so follow us, like us, subscribe. And now let's get to it. Hey.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. Claire has sent a note, as per usual.
As per usual. What does she say?
Nieces, aunts, and friends. Sound familiar? Nieces, aunts, and friends. Remember not so long ago when I wrote about how and when my mother, Barrett, decided to move back to her beloved Northern California? Well, here today, I'm taking you back with me to when I spent several months with her at the cottage on Natalie's Vineyard. My job hunting was at a crawl. The economy was not much better, and I was beginning to spend more and more time out in the vineyard, literally with the grapes. But as usual, things did not go as I expected. Well, 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 Claire. So, refresh my recollection. Claire spent the autumn in Champaign.
Yes.
She came back to New York, graduated from college, and then went out to see her mother on the West Coast, right?
Yeah, her mother was moving in or was redoing.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
The cottage.
So, okay. Shall I continue?
Yes, please do.
Claire continues, I should say. It didn't take long at all for me to see what my mother loved about this place. From the coast to the mountains in minutes, Northern California truly is amazing. In the trees. Now I see what she meant about all the trees. They're huge, and such a variety, too. It's an interesting experience for me. Here I was in a strange place that seemed and felt so familiar in one way, and yet so different in others. I was reminded of my home in New England because we were surrounded by all of our old familiar belongings, and the cottage, the part where she brought so much of her own French and California experience to this new home, also felt very familiar to me. I often had to remind myself that no, I am not back at the Greneaux home and vineyard. This is my mother's home, and I did not yet know where I would land next. What a life I had then, and now too, with a great deal of help from cool aunts known and unknown. And we'll talk again soon, Claire.
So Claire's in a quandary again. Claire's always in a quandary.
Well, yeah, I guess.
Kind of.
Is she in a quandary or she just doesn't know what's coming? Is that a quandary?
She's definitely in a in-between place right now, sounds like. But she's out in California, and it reminds her of France, specifically of the Greneaux house. So she's gone from vineyard to vineyard. She's a vineyard child, a vineyard orphan.
No, she didn't go from vineyard to vineyard. She went from vineyard. She went from a French village vineyard to New York to finish school. And now she's on the West Coast at her mother's house, this cottage that her mother has redone, you know, and her signature is all over it. So there's a bit of French, a bit of California.
Little New York.
That's Barrett for you, right?
Yep, that is Barrett. So what happens?
Hang on a second. Just want to comment. This family is taking us all over the place. And where's, question mark, where's Laurent?
Oh, that's true. We haven't heard from Laurent since
I know.
At the party.
Well, the party, right.
Right.
But, I mean, I don't think she's moving there permanently. Right? I have the sense that they go back to France and there's a back and forth-ism to this, right?
Well, there had been in the past, so I guess it would continue.
Yeah, I don't see them.
But now
casting
Barrett,
France aside.
No. So Barrett has now moved permanently to the West Coast.
Right. She sold her home in New England and she's out on the West Coast in this, as they say, beekeeper's cottage, as Claire has named this diary entry, the beekeeper's cottage.
Now her mother's going to be a beekeeper?
I think there's some kind of indication. Claire starts off the entry with, "My intention was to stay with my mother in Sonoma until I landed a job." Weeks passed, doubts set in, and soon I was interviewing less and walking the vineyard rows more. I know the feeling, Claire. I really know this feeling.
Yep.
Before I continue, my experience, for those of you out there who might join me, I was on the five-year plan in college. But anyway, you can get away with not landing a job right after graduation, you know, graduating and starting a job right away because it's summertime. And you can kind of squeak through another summer being a college kid, if you will. But when the autumn leaves begin to fall, things get very serious.
Like, but then people say, well, you don't want to look now because it's the holidays. The holidays are coming. So forget November and December and January.
There's that big shutdown holiday of Columbus Day, really. You know, then you get crazy with these
things. But people do get crazy with when you can look for a job.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of other holidays across the world. Well, the Canadians have a Thanksgiving a month or so before we do.
Oh, right? And in France, you definitely don't want to go in August.
No,
nobody's hiring in August.
No.
Everyone's on vacation.
Yeah, nope. But there's a certain feeling about September. And September, to me, the year starts in September. You know, and it's probably left over. That's a remnant of the school year timing. And
well, I think it's interesting because in France, the rentrée is in September. Everybody comes back from vacation and it's the reset of the year.
Right.
And everybody gets that, not just kids, right? Everybody. So in some places, in most villages, they have this first week of rentrée when people get together and join clubs. And so it really does make you feel like you're starting or you can learn something new with the way they've got things set up there. Mm-hmm. But I think for many of us, September is a restart, even if it's an informal restart, that you're going to do something different for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'll continue. Or should I say Claire continues. The September sun here is intense. The grapes are getting color, and I can see evidence of autumn setting in, even though it's still very hot. It's not difficult to imagine that I'm back in the village awaiting harvest again. I'm with you. Barrett's signature is evident, even though she's been here for only a year. I've seen a few photos of the cottage before the remodel. Safe to say that it has definitely been transformed. She still has that very French way of doing things. She underlines very French way of doing things. So much so that we christened the cottage Barrett's Chaumière. And in parentheses, she has the little phonetic pronunciation. It's the only reason I got that right. This is a term used for the traditional cottages on the northern Atlantic coast near Normandy. Those are little thatch roof places.
They're very cute.
Oh God, they
are
cute.
With little flower, beautiful gardens and flowers everywhere. They're really sweet.
People, I mean, they're still thatching the roofs and stuff.
Yes, they're still thatching the roofs, yeah.
Her touch, her very French touch, doesn't stop at the porch. A fieldstone wall has been planted with a long row of lavender interspaced with poppies. For the bees, she says. And a gate. The gate that she's made from old thick vine root. I can see that. I can see that for sure.
It's very artistic. Yeah.
I think it's a gate that's more of an accent than a functional.
It's not keeping anything in or out, right?
No. Claire goes on, installed on the porch with a carafe of rosé next to my laptop, I heard an approaching voice proclaim, and she gives a quote here, she says, she's been awfully busy. This is how Tim, the carpenter, described the cottage as he introduced himself, and then helping himself to some wine, asking as he poured it if I minded, he went on to tell me about their research into beehives. Not a standard beehive, mind you. No. And this is Tim describing it. No, it had to be exactly like the hives kept in the Luxembourg Gardens. A square cedar wood structure with a removable pyramidal zinc roof. He spoke easily and nonstop for 20 minutes before asking me, are you the daughter? Are you the daughter I've heard so much about? The champagne expert? Your mother really saved the day for me, you know. I hadn't had any steady work for months when she just seemed to appear, asking me if I could commit to a full-time gig with her for at least 6 months. I think she knows I'll do anything for her. Well,
that's sweet.
Well, it sounds like a pretty casual place. The guy just walks up walks up on, here's Claire installed on the porch with her rosé. She's got her laptop. You're going to do a little job hunting.
She always has rosé and her laptop on the porch,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, but it's not, what did she call the table? Henge. Right. Yeah. The big stone table, henge. Well, she doesn't have henge, but she found a place to install herself while consuming chilled rosé. It's a good way to job hunt. So this guy, Tim, sounds like a little character, right?
Every village has one, though, don't they? Or a couple.
Filled with them.
Or a couple. You need something done.
What
somebody
was it called?
The
village people?
Village, that was a, yeah.
Yeah, that goes was a way back.
Yeah.
For a little while. By the way, when I say we, I'm referring to myself, Tim, and Natalie. She's the vineyard owner slash winemaker and landlord to my mother. We have developed something of a habit. Gathering on the porch in the early evenings for a few glasses of wine, which calls out for salty, crunchy things that can lead to an omelet and sometimes a quick pasta dish. And of course, more wine. The conversations are the main event, from storytelling to problem solving. We've covered topics from travel to literature, but without exception, we always talk about wine and everything to do with every step from vine to bottle to glass. I understand now why Barrett thought so much of her from their first meeting. Tim's a decent, really smart guy, and I think it's safe to say that Natalie seems to be a cool aunt.
Another cool aunt.
I think it is her intensity, Claire says. Her desire to launch a respected label from this vineyard is the driver of all decisions around here. So, in one... Let me just point something out, okay? Let me just point this out. Claire is sitting on the porch in 1 minute, job hunting with her laptop and a glass of rosé. The carpenter just walks up in his casual way and they start chatting. And then it just seems like everything unfolds pretty quickly and Claire's made friends with the people around the place, right?
Well, it sounds like it's a pretty casual, kind of easygoing. I mean, think about it. It's a bunch of land, vineyards. Natalie's house, her mother's house.
Yeah, well, it's not like there's a bunch of neighbors. You know?
Right. So
it's a farm.
People become, you know, acquainted or friends.
Well, I think Barrett established the friendliness. I think they were coming to the porch before Claire got there.
It sounds like it's a really good deal for her. I mean, I know she, in the previous episode, Claire mentions that she's gone out to California and made this arrangement to redo this cottage. And I think it's... now she's there, right? So what's really interesting to me is she's coming to her mother's new place, but is it, you know, her old place where Claire grew up is kind of gone, right?
Yeah.
And now she's at her mother's place. So as an adult, you feel, I would imagine she feels, well, this is my mom's place. I'll hang out here for a little while until I move on to the next place.
Yeah, she just doesn't know what's next.
But she doesn't know what's next. But it's nice to have a place like that to be, to go through that experience. Waiting for the next job.
So let's move on. The next section is entitled The Professor. It has only been a few years since she inherited the vineyard from her maternal grandfather, Manuel. This would be Natalie, right?
Yes.
She really is of this place, as Laurent would say. She was even born here on this farm. Always a fixture in the vineyard by her grandfather's side, Natalie learned everything he knew. But he insisted she earn a college degree before he would let her work full-time in their vineyard. Her compromise solution was to earn her degree in viticulture and enology and return to the vineyard on the weekends, and then help run the vineyard full-time after graduation. However, her father delayed her arrival in the vineyard with a graduation gift, 6 months on a European trek across select wine regions, to polish up, as he said, what she had learned in college. His idea was a great one. Natalie thinks she probably learned more in Europe than in school. Well, yeah, the in-person experience usually is a better one. Many evenings on the porch were filled with Natalie's stories about her grandfather, so much so we felt as though we had known him for years. And even though Manuel was well known and highly regarded for his depth of knowledge about growing grapes and making wine, he sold most of his grape harvest every year. Local growers thought he had learned from working from one of the major labels in Napa or Sonoma. The truth was that he was self-taught and had always worked alone, insisting independence was better than the money. Better than the money he could have made working for one of the big companies. This guy has a spirit, right? Sure. Before I go on, so Natalie really was a fixture. Well, she wrote that. Natalie was a fixture by his side. She has all of his accumulated knowledge, all of these things. I don't really have a lot to
say.
And
she's going to make a go of it. I think what's interesting is it's almost like the next, it's the next generation moving it along.
Yep.
So
yep.
Her grandfather grew these grapes, sold them to the local wineries, mm-hmm. and now she's decided that she's going to make something of this. So she's going to establish a label. It's a totally different experience than her grandfather's because she's going to grow the grapes. She's going to basically make the wine and sell it.
I think Natalie's experience takes what her grandfather had done because he was a farmer. He was a grape grower, but he was making wine. We already know that. Let's go on. A Woman Like Them is the next section title. Subtitle, I should say. A Woman Like Them. Natalie clearly understood that his, meaning her grandfather's, reputation would have been quite different if anyone had known how good his wines are. He'd have been more of a threat than a friend or resource. She was also keenly aware that things would change dramatically when the goal to create a fine wine from this vineyard was realized. Her attitude, her force of will, was strikingly similar to the historic stories I told to countless people on champagne tours. How it took a woman to make the wine we know today as champagne, and how many women still head several major champagne labels. There on my mother's porch in Natalie's vineyard, there were so many reminders of the histories of the champagne houses that I knew so well. And I knew Natalie would prevail, much like those French women of the early 18th century. Their ideas, knowledge, and dreams, but it was always the force of their will that made it happen. Boy, if that's not true.
That's very true.
Woman decides something, it's going to happen, right? This is a nice long story, so I'm not doing a whole lot of commentary in between, but I'm into it. The next section, French Habits on the West Coast. She was a storyteller like no other I'd known. Only a few years my senior, Natalie sounded like an old sage at times, and we loved listening to the stories from this place. She recounted that Manuel was always so kind to anyone, he earned the nickname of the professor, from teaching so many locals about the grape varieties and growing protocols. Newly minted winemakers would come by for advice when they realized they might be in over their heads. Few, if any, knew of the organic wines he was making or the new process steps he had developed during his time in his vineyard, emphasis on his. A prodigious note keeper, Manuel recorded every detail to every plant and row, filed it meticulously in his library card catalog, and made wine development notations every year about the aging of his wines. Those little oak drawers with his note cards were his treasure chest. They were a birthday gift from Natalie. She was only in high school when she rescued it from the library and refinished it for his 50th birthday. And all these years later, it's now her treasure chest and resource to launch this new label of hers. So let me go on before you hop in. I know I have a sense of what you're about to say. Manuel's catalog reminded me of very similar systems in the champagne houses. On tours, I always showed guests the library of notes taken by generations of winemakers. Enthralled, they loved to look at the cards with the pen and ink notes written in that classic, consistent longhand so deeply associated with historic records. It was an important and physical connection with the history. It wasn't just the card catalog that reminded me so much of Champagne or my little village in France. It was the way things were being done here that felt so familiar to me. It felt like my home. Oh, Claire.
Oh, Claire.
Claire's homesick for a place that she just, it is no more, but it is here too.
Well, maybe home is where the heart is, as opposed, and not to make that a cliche, but maybe that's what it's about, as opposed to a physical place.
We have traveled to several of those champagne houses that Claire references, and the little library card catalogs, it's nirvana. It really is. They're beautiful, like white, you know, that classic European white oak. And it doesn't have a they're finished because they're waxed, but it's the years of use and they're clean and they just have such a really pretty patina with a little brass like ring knob on the front to pull it out.
You know what I'm thinking about? And there's a famous champagne house on the Rue de Champagne in Epernay.
The one with the
looks
stairs?
Like Castiglione, I think it's called.
Cazenove,
that's right. And there's a room with these card catalogs, and there's remember the old library ladders?
Yeah, but they had spiral ladders that went up, and then it was on a rail system that you could slide it down. So it was a little tiny spiral ladder because it was at least 15 or 18 feet up.
Beautiful room.
But it was a wall of those.
But it was a wall of these little drawers. And
like, what is it, about 4x4, would you say, the drawer?
About that. And it's just amazing to see that and think of all that history of all the people who have written those cards. And so it's interesting that she finds a card catalog, which we used to have in libraries back in the old days before computers. And she rescued one and refinished it for her grandfather, which is kind of cool. And now she has it.
Yeah.
So that's a beautiful thing.
Let me get into my technology versus classic traditional stuff. Now, what I've learned recently, that the note taking on when they do tastings, interim tastings on how the wine is developing, they use codes, barcodes, and a scanner pen. So if they do a tasting and they say they want to say, you know, it's developing tannins or whatever, they just score it with the barcode. And that's
no more longhand, huh? Beautiful longhand.
Now, I understand and I agree that this is a far superior way of accumulating and processing information, I should say data, and there you can see trends more clearly, I think. But
the algorithm takes over.
I don't know if it's an algorithm or what, but their formulation is much more specific. So less art, more science, maybe?
Yeah, less art, more science.
I don't know if I like
that. But wine tends to be more science, more art than science. I guess where they're changing. Is that the way Natalie's going to do it, I wonder?
Careful balance and dance of the two, where the artful hand of the chef de cave, as they call them, is involved in the development of the flavor profile for a particular house of champagne or of any wine for that matter. You know, certain brands are known for a certain flavor profile. Of course, everybody claims they taste like brioche and they have traces of honey, brioche, apricot.
Coffee.
They show you these pictures of things and you taste the apricot, right? No. But I do see that jug of apricot flavoring over there in the corner by the tanks.
They don't do that. It's all natural. Oh, I think what's interesting, and she raises it, that her grandfather was into organic wines, which is a really new thing, organic wines.
Yeah, well, he was doing it for a while, though. There were a few people who bought into it very early on. Maybe they never left it.
We should tell our audience what organic wines are.
Biologique. Well, what is the definition, then?
That they're not... that the grapes are not altered by pesticides.
Yeah, because you can't establish a plot of land that has been treated for years and you can't wave a wand that it's now organic.
Right.
It's the treatment of a crop.
Right.
Right.
And in Europe, EU rules are different than the American rules, but EU rules basically are very adhere to very strict guidelines as to what can and cannot be used in the development of the grapes.
Right.
So biologique, and a lot of people are into biologique because they think it's a better wine. It doesn't have pesticides.
Well, it's not as adulterated. I think there's, it's not just that it's organic. There's also a connotation that it's more natural.
Right.
And I know they sort of mean the same thing, but they don't really. You know, a more natural wine to me would be, it really stands on its own in terms of its flavor profile, but that's not always how wines are made. I mean, people tag it with certain flavor adjustments, not just, you know, sweetness versus tartness, you know, but other
I think
flavor additives. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I was trying to think of another beverage that we consider natural as opposed to something that has an additive, like, you know, a soft drink, or not a soft drink, but a juice that is natural. All natural juice doesn't have any, the plants have not been sprayed with anything.
Okay, now we get into the discussion about how in the United States, how they can slice and dice a definition into oblivion, right? You can say all natural because, you know,
it grew from the ground.
No.
It grew from the ground.
No, but they, you know, the homicidal, no, I shouldn't say that. Many definitions have been manipulated. And all natural does not necessarily mean organic. Obviously, they're different words. They mean different things. But no additives means something very different than all natural. Because you can, here's a good example. You can have orange juice, okay? And a fresh squeezed, no additive orange juice is different than an all natural orange juice. Because an all natural orange juice could have some white grape juice put in. They could put in some ascorbic acid because that's technically natural. And there are a lot of things you can do to navigate definitions and rules. And it's just not true to the spirit of the thing, you know?
Right.
Fortunately, organic has been taken more seriously. And as more money goes into it, more people participate, we have to be serious about what it actually means.
And they tend to be a little bit more expensive because of the way they are produced.
Of course, they tend to have lower yields, which isn't a bad thing with grapes. I mean, do you ever see some of those vines? They get some little sorry, skinny little bunch of grapes hanging there. They don't grow like eating grapes, usually. Right. They're not these big, luscious bunches of grapes hanging low on the vine to be picked. In, for example, in Burgundy, where the really old, you know, root stock is growing, and you'll see these gnarly things growing out of this rocky, funky soil, and it'll be a vintage year, and it's like, you know, 8 little grapes on a stem, and it's, you know, they're kind of sorry looking, but they're like, oh, it's
they
a spectacular year.
Yeah.
So on the way back from my wine,
another trip.
Oh, God, I got lost in that. Yes, I did. Claire feels like she's at home in France, home in New England, home in her mother's beekeeper's cottage.
I think we have pictures of those beekeepers, those bee hive. What do you call them? Bee containers.
The bee.
Bee containers.
You're going to go park your boat later?
Bee containers. Beehives.
Beehives, yes.
But they have a special name for them in France. Don't they?
Hive de bee.
Abril.
Abril.
De Luxembourg.
Yes.
Abril de Luxembourg. That's probably the name. Abbé de Luxembourg.
There is a little, it's a little cottage kind of thing in Luxembourg Gardens where they have a beekeeper and he has these beautiful hives. They're about, a foot and a half high, square. Just like Tim described them. I mean, this is, I don't know that they're made of cedar, but they have a little zinc top. It's a pyramid, a little round ball on top. They're beautiful. I don't think I've ever been in Luxembourg Gardens that I didn't go over there to take photographs of the beehives. And they have these little signs that say, so typical, attention, the danger of the bees. Yeah. You know, like
they also give you the history of that.
I know, they have those little
plot.
Porcelain plaques.
Right.
The other thing that strikes my funny bone with that, you see these porcelain plaques in France, and there'll be 3 paragraphs in French, and then there'll be like 30 words in English. And it's like, no, you're not giving it all to me. I can tell. There's more here for the French speaking.
That is very true.
Folks. You gave me the abbreviation.
You don't know how to speak.
Yeah, but I think it's funny. You're standing there looking at beehives, and they have to put a caution sign like, there's bees here.
Very true. So clear.
So we have a beekeeper's cottage in Northern California.
That's a very cool name, Beekeeper's Cottage.
The Beekeeper's Cottage.
Claire's mother sure has made a new life for herself out there, hasn't she?
I don't think this is a new life for Barrett. I think this is Barrett. Barrett kind of bumbles along. I'm thinking of bees, right? No, Barrett kind of moves along and she just goes through different things. I think this is very normal for her. I do. Anyway, it's a new phase, as you say. Another beginning in France. Oh, God, if Claire goes back to France right now, I'm going to scream. More weeks slipped away, and I started showing up earlier in the vineyard to work alongside Natalie. Somebody's avoiding the job hunting. The physical labor was a relief, and I welcomed it. My mother made lunch for us and left it out on her porch. And that reminded me of the ones shared with Michelle Greneau and the guys only a year ago. You remember those stories about going out to the vineyard? The rooster tails of dust kicked up by the little white
If you haven't
trucks.
Heard this, you should go back to season one. I think it's 11 or 12.
Yeah. Everything reminded me of France. Of course, I knew I had to find a job soon, but this working in the vineyard was a welcome distraction that at least made me feel helpful. And then I got a call. Oh, God.
From where?
I'm not even going to read
anymore. Come on, tell us, come on.
No, but let's stop and think about this. So Claire's a little discouraged. The job hunting isn't happening. So she's hanging out in the vineyard. She's working. And that's what she was doing in France.
That's
right?
True.
And then she's going and having these nice lunches on the porch with her mother. You know, her mother's made lunch and put it out for Natalie, presumably Natalie and Tim and Claire on the porch. And her mother's floating around. Yeah, like the gang, right? Lunch at the Beekeeper's Cottage. That would be a great name for a restaurant, right?
That would be a good name.
And she had said, you know, she knew she had to find a job soon, but this working in the vineyard was a welcome distraction. And then she gets the call. Annoyed by the interruption, I almost didn't bother to answer. I was busy tying vines to supports. But I did. The call was an inquiry from a very big box store company known to be one of the biggest wine buyers worldwide. And they were looking for a French-speaking buyer with champagne expertise and an interest in expanding to the spirit products from France.
Oh, gosh. How nice is that? Claire.
Boy, everything changes in a moment. A phone call changes. True. This is where Claire gets a job, right?
I think so. Sounds like it.
She continues, a so-called unnamed associate had recommended me for this position. The caller asked to flip to a video chat in that moment if I was willing. Okay. Think about it. And she says it right here. She says, my vineyard stage was set. Their offer was for me to travel constantly, buy great wines, discover new ones, and develop their and my own interests and spirits. How could I say no to that offer? So hold on a second. So Claire gets this call. She's working in the vineyards. It's hot September, October, somewhere in there. So she's probably dirty. She's standing in a vineyard and she gets a call about a wine buyer's job. You want to do a video? Yeah, sure. Would you like a close-up on the
on the supports? Oh, it's incredible.
This is like perfect setting, right? So she'll be, and they want her to develop some line of spirits, meaning the like eau de vie or something with a more alcohol in wine. Basically, that's the definition, isn't it?
But it's all in France.
And she ends this paragraph saying, how could I say no to that offer? Life is hard, Claire. Life is hard. That night on the porch was a late one. We debated all the pros and cons, all of us, my mother, Natalie, Tim, and me. Of course, I knew I'd accept. This was a dream job. But I didn't want to leave this little oasis I had grown so fond of. And then Natalie laughed at me. She said, oh, you'll be back. This place has gotten into your blood, too. You'll never be fully away from it, even when you are not physically here. Just say yes and get to it. Store your things in the loft of the barn, and they'll be here for you whenever you return. You'll be traveling all the time, and when you're not, you'll stay here with us at the vineyard.
Oh, what a great invitation.
Natalie is a cool aunt, right?
Natalie is a cool aunt.
So that's the end of the quote from Natalie. Two things struck me, said Claire. First, the part where Natalie said, this place was in my blood, sounded an awful lot like Laurent's description of terroir, that you are of this place. And she puts that in quotes. And secondly, am I being invited to live in a vineyard yet again? The sun woke me on the porch at dawn. I had slept there all night. Disoriented, I expected to hear the Greneau kids giggling. but this was definitely a different beginning. And then there was the so-called unnamed associate. I wondered who this could have been.
I was going to say something about that earlier when they somebody made this, whoever made the
Wait
call.
A minute. Did we start this episode off with...
Where's Laurent? Where's Laurent? Oh, she shows up. Well, we don't know if it's her, so we can't be.
Yeah.
We can't jump to that conclusion, but...
I want to check for
fingerprints. Talk about a perfect job. My God, it fits all, you know, checks all the boxes, all of her experience. She speaks French. She's... And they want to expand, which is even better. So, Claire... She started off pretty disgruntled or unhappy. I shouldn't say disgruntled at the beginning of this. And now she is going to work.
Oh, Claire, 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 Claire.
So she's found a new terroir, I guess you could say.
It's adding to. It's not.
It's adding to. It's
you
not
don't
a change.
Leave anything ever. You That's go true. Back. You can add more.
The past is never the past, is it?
No, it's not. It's part of your terroir. You'll be back. And on that note, we hope you will be back, right?
Yes, we certainly do.
So let's keep this conversation going over in our Facebook group. If you want, you can share your thoughts and stories about your cool aunts. I'm Sam.
And I'm Ted.
And we'll see you next week when we're back at the mic.